Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today we're going to spend the hour talking about the attack in Charlottesville, Virginia. The attack was by a white nationalist, and I'd like you to join in the conversation as well. We'll continue the conversation from last hour from Rob's show. Here's the number if you'd like to get in the queue for calling in now. It's 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. The latest news is a judge has denied bond for an Ohio man accused of plowing his car into the crowd at a white nationalist rally. Judge Robert Downer said during bond hearing today he would appoint a lawyer for James Alex Fields Jr. Fields is charged with second-degree murder and other counts after authorities say he drove into the crowd, fatally injuring one woman and hurting 19 other people. And we'll talk a lot more about this issue in this hour. And later in the show, we're going to speak with an organizer with Black Lives Matter. But our first guest is Florida State Representative Sean Shaw. He's a Democrat from Tampa. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
Well, before we get to that, to a bill, we're going to talk later on about a bill that has to do with driving into protesters, and we'll get into that a lot. But I want to hear your reactions to the violent white nationalist demonstration in Virginia on Saturday. There's what's soon to be an iconic photo. It was in the Tampa Bay Times yesterday morning. It was taken by a photographer at Daily Progress in Charlottesville. What's your reaction to this happening in the U.S.?
It's tough. This picture came across my Facebook feed, I believe, Saturday or Sunday. And quite frankly, I'm speechless still. I didn't think we were here as a country. I didn't think that, I just didn't think this was where we were at. And it's very disappointing. I don't know if I'm more angry, more sad, more disappointed, more invigorated. I don't know what I am after looking at this photo, but this photo is going to be the photo that 20, 30 years from now we look back on as representative of our times right now, unfortunately. I have a visceral reaction to this photo. And if you don't, then I don't know what you're looking at. I want to show it to the Facebook Live if I can, so they can see which photo we're talking about. It's really disturbing.
Yeah, and that photo was taken by Ryan M. Kelly, and he was with the Daily Progress in Charlottesville, Virginia. And it just shows that Dodge Challenger ramming into a group of protesters, and there are five or six bodies flying in the air, at least one woman on the ground, it appears. It's quite disturbing. I think that anyone who sees it is going to be shocked if you haven't seen it already. If you have thoughts, give us a call, 813-239-9663. And, you know, so the reason I brought you on, Representative Shaw, is because on LinkedIn yesterday you posted something that reminded us that last spring, when the Florida legislature was in session, the legislature considered but ultimately rejected a bill that would keep people who did something like this. If you drove into a crowd of protesters, unless it was proved that it could be intentional, that you could not be civilly sued. Tell us more about that bill. And it was introduced, I should say, by, let me see if I have the names here. Senator George Gaynor, and in the House of Representatives by J.R. Williamson. I think they were two freshmen, a freshman senator and a freshman representative, if I'm not mistaken. A similar bill has not yet been filed in Florida for 2018. So what is that bill, and why did it fail in the Florida legislature?
I'd like to tell you it failed because it's a terrible bill, but I don't think it ever was heard in the House. I believe it failed in one of the committees. Mm-hmm. In the Senate, if it even got to a committee stop in the Senate. But, you know, that bill failed, and we hadn't even had Charlottesville yet. So I hope that this session coming up that we don't even consider such a bill. But, you know, I'm looking at this picture again because I just can't. It's hard for me to look away from it. This African-American man here that is getting hit by the car and falling on the ground, he wouldn't be able to sue the person driving that vehicle unless he could prove in a court of law that the act of driving into the crowd was intentional, if this bill were to become law that we're talking about. And I'm a lawyer. We talked about this when I got here. Do you know how hard it is to prove whether something is intentional or unintentional?
Sure. I mean,
you got to get in someone's head.
Yeah.
You got to look at circumstantial evidence. How fast were they going? Was it a straight line? I mean, we're getting into nuances here that just aren't what we ought to be getting into. But I just want to take a minute. And, you know, when you first introduced this, you said white nationalists, which is more than the president has said to address this. And while let's just understand where we are as a country when the president of the United States refuses to call this what it is, which is terrorism, which is racism, which is white nationalism. I don't know why we're scared to use those words. I remember when President Obama was in office, he got just destroyed for not using certain words, radical Islam. And we're afraid now to use the words of, you can see it on this picture. You don't have to draw anything else. You can see on this picture what we experienced yesterday. A young woman lost her life because of those elements in our country. And we've got to call it what it is. And we need a commander in chief. We need a president who's not afraid to tell the country that we're better than this. You know, when I'm agreeing with Orrin Hatch and Senator Graham from South Carolina,
Marco Rubio.
Yeah, something strange. But at least they called a spade a spade. Our president has yet to do that. And then when he was kind of called to the carpet on it, his response was, well, of course, that's what I meant. This is the most prolific Twitterer that's ever been in the White House. And when he wants to be specific and when he wants to say something on Twitter, he's very good at doing it. And now we are to read between the lines of his violence on all sides comment to determine, oh, well, of course he's against it. Well, I can't tell he's against it. During the presidential campaign, he repeatedly retweeted white nationalist websites. He doesn't repudiate David Duke and people like that. In fact, his campaign has, was a dog whistle to certain elements of this country. And his comments or lack thereof show what a lot of us thought he was doing when he ran for office, which is to somewhat, at least partially, incite this sort of crowd to feel comfortable in what they're doing. I certainly don't want to say that if you're a Trump voter, you support this. I do not want to say that, nor do I believe that. What I do believe is the way he conducts himself, the things he says, the way he campaigned, certainly provided a fertile ground for this sort of hatred to manifest itself.
Why do you think it was necessary for the president to interject the both sides part of that? After the Boston Marathon, you didn't hear anyone saying, well, I condemn the violence on both sides or anything, let me say it, ridiculous like that. I mean, there's no other violence in that photograph. I mean, there were probably clashes throughout the day that didn't turn deadly, but what's the point of even saying on both sides?
Listen, if I could justify the things that the president says on Twitter, I'd be a rich person. I have no idea, other than I know how I feel. And the way I feel is that he's giving a wink and a nod to a certain element of this country. And if you see how that element of the country responded to his tweet and to his comments, it's clear they were pleased. They were happy about how he approached it and what he said and the exact words he used. Words matter. He knows that because when he wants to, he uses very specific language. And, you know, something else he said during the presidency when he was referring to the African-American vote. Well, what if you have to lose? I think we can now see what we have to lose, Mr. President. We can now see it.
Our guest is Representative Sean Shaw. He's a Democrat from Tampa, and he is a legislator in the Florida Legislature in the House of Representatives. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:15 in the afternoon. Later on in the show, we'll bring in a Black Lives Matter organizer, but we'd like to hear your thoughts. 813-239-9663. I want to go back to this bill again. I know I don't want to belabor it too much, but I definitely don't want to let it be forgotten that there was a bill that would have allowed or would have essentially forgiven people for plowing into protesters with their cars in the Florida legislature. It failed, but there are other states where it didn't fail, where it was brought up did it pass in any of these states?
I don't think it passed in North Carolina. I know that was one of the states that was considering it, but a better question is why? What are these bills about? Why do we need them? you know, I've heard there were some people on my social media that were saying, well, you know, I need to be able to drive my car to work. That's the reason we need bills like this. And if that's on the one side of why we need such a bill, allow me to tell you what's on the other side, and I'll just show you this picture. And I believe this picture speaks as to why those types of bills are dangerous and unnecessary at best, and maybe even a little bit underhanded at worst, as opposed to your ability to drive through a street to get to your work. Drive somewhere else. Drive around. You don't get to plow into a protester. And then the protester, in some of these instances, be charged with a misdemeanor.
Well, let me read something from WUFT's website. They did a story on this bill in March, and a UF history professor, Paul Ortiz, said, and it gets to the point you were just making, driving is a privilege, speech is a right. Your right as a driver is not protected by the U.S. Constitution. Your First Amendment right to speech is, meaning the protesters have rights, the car, you know, the driving isn't protected by the Constitution. So that's kind of getting at your point that you just made. Let me give out the number again, and I'm going to read an email because I think this is going to be a very provocative email. The number is 813-239-9663, and Jeff out there in cyberspace writes, this alleged lawyer you got talking right now is either a liar or must have had his internet cut off, because President Trump very much did so denounce the white nationalists, the white supremacists, find the neo-Nazis. I mean, maybe he means and the neo-Nazis. So how would you respond to Jeff out there saying that President Trump actually did denounce the white supremacists?
Well, if you show it to me, I'd stand to be corrected. I haven't seen it. And let me tell you what I take by denounce. It does not mean I condemn the violence on all sides, prayers to the injured. That is not a denunciation of what I'm talking about. It needs to be plainly denounced of what sort of incident just happened. Let me give you some examples of when the president is very clear when he denounces things. He denounces any sort of terrorist activity that is undertaken by someone of a certain faith, Muslim, Islam, someone of a certain race, African-American minority, but let it be something like this, and it's the most milquetoast, neutral, weak denunciation I've ever heard. This president didn't like that. This president is someone who won because of his the way he makes statements and how forward he is. And for that sort of statement, when the country needs to hear, you know, from the commander-in-chief, why we're better than this, why this doesn't reflect America, why this isn't where we are at 2017. And so if such a statement was released, I stand to be corrected. I'd love to see it.
All right, well, let's go to the phone lines. Our guest is Sean Shaw. He's a state representative in the Florida legislature. And my name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:19 in the afternoon. Connie in Tampa, you're on the air.
Hello. All power to the people. Let me just say this. I don't think we need to try to, like, dance around what we see happening in America now, because history has recorded individuals that have that type of behavior. Like, we now, in retrospect, know what Robert E. Lee was about. We know what George Wallace was about. We can even point to Bull Connor. And so to say, you know, why the president is doing this and we don't believe, I believe that the man is a staunch racist that has been held up by individuals in this country that want a return to the good old days. Well, white people have supreme superiority over everybody on the planet, not just black folks, but everybody. And so now what we're seeing, that people are making a conscious decision to say how they want history to record their behavior, or if they have silent complicity with this behavior. And unfortunately, that young lady was killed because she was on the right side of history. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have a responsibility, unless we are willing to pass this on to the next generation, to ask them to figure this stuff out. We have to take a bold stand and say, not on my watch. That means that any bill coming through the Florida legislature that's going to bring harm to a group, you would say, not on your watch. And if we have Florida legislators that want to push these nasty bills, then we have to say to the groups that's being targeted by, don't come and spend your money in Florida. I just refuse to believe that we're so entangled or paralyzed out of fear that we don't want to call it for what we see it. That he won his presidency based on the fact that he was giving poor, middle class, upper class white people the feeling that to be superior over other groups was in their view. And this is why now we have all of these young people in the streets that's making a determination and showing tremendous courage that they don't want to live in this world. And we all have to stand with these young people and others to say, no, 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 no. A presidency term lasts for 4 years. He'll come and go if he don't get reelected. And we have a responsibility to say for the greater good, we're not going to condone this behavior. Thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you for your call, Connie. Your thoughts?
Sister Connie, thank you. You said something that I want to talk about, and that is his campaign and his slogan of Make America Great Again. I know what some of us thought he was talking about, and it has come to pass. It's this picture. When some of us hear Make America Great Again, that instills in us a desire to take this country backwards to a time where things like this, things that you saw in Charlottesville, could happen. Times when KKK white nationalists were marching openly in broad daylight in the street. Times where people were getting killed in the name of justice and solidarity in broad daylight. That is what happened Saturday. And so the Make America Great slogan was always something that I felt I had a visceral reaction to, and I know others had a visceral reaction to, because it is exactly kind of where I see we're headed, and it's very sad and unfortunate. But Sister Connie, you're right. Anything before the legislature that affects any group of people in that kind of negative way, we all need to stand up and say that's not right.
All right. Thanks for that call, Connie. Do you want to take one more phone call?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Hi, Daryl.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
If I could kind of piggyback off of what Ms. Connie Burton said, but not exactly what she said. She expressed her own thoughts very well. But with the bill that I think that you were talking about, what I think that's really targeted to is like law enforcement gone to seed. What I mean by that? Oh, well, let's just say, like, if you have a protest march, like what occurred in Minnesota, where you had some rogue cop who took the life of somebody and sitting in a seat who had a permit to carry a gun. And we all know the just behind that whole event that happened. The guy was murdered. Well, you got a bunch of protesters who are blocking traffic or whatever. Let's just say you have some outraged person who don't think that they should be blocking my way and whatever like that, and they decide to take their vehicle, which is a 2-ton missile, and plow into people and use that as a weapon. They shouldn't be charged by that. That's the law gone to seed, and I really question the sanity of any representative who would even bring forth a bill like that. I'll just say like that. President Trump, we've said it before. Are you really surprised? And we told you so. This is who he is. This is who the man really is. And are you really expecting him to say anything about this? What is he going to say? This is a man who denied access to buildings that he built to certain minorities. Okay? Mm-hmm. His history is laid out. And I'm upset. I don't really know what else to say, but don't deny what you're seeing on television. And now I understand that he's canceled a press conference. Mr. Twitter doesn't know what to say.
Right.
I don't call him a commander, and I'm finna go. I don't call him commander and chief. I call him coward and thief. That's what he is, and I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Daryl.
You know, You're he's exactly correct. You can see it on TV. I don't have to interpret this for you. You can watch watch it directly for yourself. And you know, as I wrap up here, I do want to bring it back locally. You know, we have had here in Hillsborough County, we're having discussions about the Confederate monument near the courthouse. And, you know, I've been on social media and some people have said, well, why is this such a big deal? Why does it matter? It's just, you're seeing, I hope you can see now why to some of us it is so important what the Confederate monument stands for, what it means as a symbol of discrimination, why it's not proper to be there. And when you look at it in the context of Charlottesville and all this other stuff happening, it is important. It is not a, black people are just making a big deal out of something that needs to be forgotten into history. Well, listen, the Confederate, it is a monument to the Confederacy. The Confederacy rebelled against this country for slavery. I mean, you can cover it up in sugar and spice, however you want to do it. That's a monument to slavery. Those of us who believe that ought not be there. This is not just a Hillsborough County issue. This is a national issue, especially when you look at it in the context of what's going on.
And another additional layer on top of that is that this monument and also a lot of the other monuments around the country weren't erected in 1865 or 1866. Right. They were erected in the midst of Jim Crow in the 1910s. And they were essentially, this has been put out there that they were there to kind of reinforce the separation of the races.
And next to a courthouse where you're supposed to be judged as an equal citizen is a monument to a time where you were not. That is exactly wrong. That is exactly the worst place that monument could be, is to be next to the courthouse where people walk in and out every day hoping that the scales of justice will be blind.
Representative Sean Shaw, thanks so much for joining us on Midpoint today. Appreciate it.
No, happy to be here. Thank you.
Sean Shaw is a representative, a Democrat from Tampa in the Florida legislature. And our next guest in about a minute will be Donna Davis from Black Lives Matter. We'll be right back. We're going to hear some music. In the meantime, here's the number, 813-239-9663. We'll continue this discussion. Here's some Bob Marley.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, everywhere is war. It's a war that until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes, it's a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race, and it's a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality.
I'm Sean Canaan, I'm the host of Midpoint Monday, and I want to hear from you. Were you at one of the vigils last night? Are you organizing something for your community? Let our listeners know. Here's the number, 813-239-9663. And we turn now to our next guest. Donna Davis is from Black Lives Matter. I want to welcome you to WMNF's Midpoint, Donna.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. Thanks so much for joining us. And so why don't you tell us about, you were at the vigil in Tampa last night. Is that right? And maybe were kind of part of the organizing of that to some degree?
I think early on, we were a part of the organizing.
So what set the scene for us? How many people were there? What did it look like? What did it feel like?
So about 250, 300 people came out in response to a call to have a vigil to honor the life that was lost and the people that were hurt in Charlottesville. And so several community organizations decided to get together and do that. we wanted to focus mostly on the life that was lost and the organizations that that person was a part of, where the sacrifice was made, and to really focus that message on that this event came out of a cauldron that's been boiling and churning for quite some time. And we wanted to recenter that message. It's the same message that we've been in the streets talking about for so many years now.
And there was a little bit of controversy. I'll take it as far as you want to take it, though. I saw Mitch Perry wrote for Florida Politics this morning that the state attorney for Hillsborough County, Andrew Warren, actually left last night's vigil. Mm-hmm. Because one of the speakers had, you know, said, "Why are the police here?" Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything? Did you notice any of that conflict where there were some people who maybe had a different? So there was this message of unity, let's say, and there was also a message of, you know, maybe a more radical message. Where can we go with that?
We are not liberals. We do not support or espouse any aspect of a liberal agenda. Liberalism is a great optic. It has not gotten us where we'd like to go. And so, and we've seen people taking more advanced versions of their views seems to be what's working. I don't believe that we can continue to be moderate and to be weak in the face of such vicious assault on our freedoms and now on our actual bodies. So we're not in support of liberal agendas. We're not going to support organizations that attack symbols instead of structures. The apparatus of our oppression is vast, and there are ways to dismantle it, but the liberal agenda doesn't really want to do that. And as a result, it's creating some of what we're seeing. You know, our inability to address the soul of this nation is creating what we're seeing in Charlottesville, and Charlottesville is the first of many.
You're saying that there could be other deadly, rising up from the right, from
USF. Mm-hmm. They're coming to the University of North Florida.
University of Florida, I believe in
University of Florida on September 12th. The Aggies are planning the Longhorns are planning to have a white power protest in Texas. They're popping up all over. Boston's up next. This isn't going to stop.
Yeah, there does seem to be a sense that the white nationalists or the neo-Nazis or however they want to be labeled or however it's accurate to label them, they feed on the fact that they're getting notoriety, that there's that these protests are becoming larger and becoming well known, and actually the violent part of it as well. I think that it seems like the more that happens, the more momentum that they're feeling. I think. I mean, that's what it seems like based on the number of
than what we're seeing. There are many Americans who support this uprising, and they're silent. And they're participating by default. They are funding these movements. There are people in the mayor's office. There are people in your law enforcement agencies. There are people in your schools, churches that support this. White America is not denouncing this. And just because people came out into the streets last night and held a vigil for a white person who was lost in the line of duty when Jesus Cervantes was killed in Plant City, those people were not there. They do not show up for events that do not center them. So by default, again, they're supporting these events.
Let me read something from the AP for you. And this came in today. A Massachusetts police department is investigating a Facebook comment by an officer who wrote, and this is in quotes, "Ha ha ha, love this," in response to a story about a car crashing into the counter-protesters at the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. And Springfield Police Commissioner John Barbieri says he received a complaint about the comment yesterday and opened an internal investigation. Officer Conrad Lavierier wrote, "In response to the violence, Ha ha ha, love this. Maybe people shouldn't block roadways. In an interview, LeVerrier says he's a good man who made a stupid comment. Mayor Dominic Sarno says there's no place for this in our society, let alone from a Springfield police officer. The reason I read that in this particular moment of the show is because you had just said that, you know, we don't know. There's this kind of mentality creeping around in various parts of our community. And, you know, typically the good man who made a stupid comment, you don't know that until they make that comment. You don't know that this is out there.
Who doesn't know? We know. Because we live under this system. We bristle under the bit daily. You know, when we go out into the world, we encounter these people and they treat us like the things they're saying on Facebook. Black America and woke white America is not shocked about this emergence. This is not a development. This is an uprising of something that's always been there. We live in an ethno state. Right? This has always been a white country for and about and centers white people. Crack epidemic was not a crisis. People were criminalized and lost their lives in the penal system. Now our president wants to call the opioid crisis a state of emergency for America. You have places, people are carrying Narcan around in schools, churches, in case someone goes out. None of that humanity was available during the crack epidemic, which the government sponsored, by the way. So we've been living this way since the inception of this country. So what you guys are seeing is with your eyes is what we experience with our lives daily.
813-239-9663. We have a whole bank of people on the phone waiting to get on. So I'm going to try to go to a phone call right away, and we'll get back to this very soon. Let me read quickly one email that came in from Rob Lori in our news department. He says that, or he sent an article that was in Bloomberg that Trump has been criticized for not denouncing white nationalists at a rally. And so this is a story on Bloomberg.com that you can look up. I'm not going to read it, but that's the title. Trump criticized for not denouncing white nationalists at a rally. That's in response to Jeff, who emailed in earlier that the president did denounce white nationalists. But let's hear now from, and if you notice, I apologize to the men. I don't know. I'm taking women first, if I can. If there's a woman on the line, they're going first. So Lily in St. Pete. Hi, Lily. Lily, are you there? I'm going to put you on hold, and we will go to Bradley in Tampa. Hi, Bradley.
Hi. Am I on here?
You are. Go ahead.
Great. So I am a Democrat and a liberal, and I stand with you in your fight to dismantle white supremacy. And with that in mind, I called to talk about tactics. I was calling for Representative Sean Shaw, but I would love to hear what you have to say. So whenever we get to a point where there is a problem that is completely undeniable, like the attack in Charlottesville, the response is so often whataboutism, right? Rather than respond to the actual problem that we are raising, people say, well, what about this? What about that? And what about the other? And this is happening not just, on Facebook or from explicit Nazis, but also from our members of Florida's House of Representatives. So Republican Neil Comey, in response to the Charlottesville attack, said he didn't know much about it, but immediately went on a long post about an event in the L.A. riots 25 years ago. So when people are pulling back 25 years to try to avoid dealing with a white supremacist attack on peaceful protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia, what is our best way to respond, right? How should we respond to that to make sure that the focus of the conversation stays on the issue at hand?
All right, Bradley, appreciate the question. Thanks so much. Donna?
You refocus the conversation on the issue at hand. You say, this is not about that. Right now, we're talking about this, which is when people tell us all lives matter, we say, you know, we know that, but right now we're talking about black lives, which we can't seem to do in this country without people interjecting some obtuse angle. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to talk about black lives. And so when people do this, they are diverting, they're trying to misguide people away. They're trying to guide people away from dealing with the actual issue. This is not a good thing to do. It's not productive. And so you say, but let's talk about this. We're going to talk about this. Refocus them on the point.
All right. Thank you so much for that call, Bradley. I'm going to move on. You might have a follow-up. I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead quickly.
Oh, no. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'll follow.
Thanks, Bradley. 813-239-9663 if you'd like to join the conversation. David out there writes, the impossible journey of my great-great-great uncle still haunts me. He joined the Union to save the nation and left the Union lines to walk home and die with his family. After being gut shot by a Confederate traitor following the war, the Klan put up monuments across the South that carry not one word about his sacrifice, but celebrate the memory of the Confederate soldier who killed him. That's from David out there in email land. So thank you for that. We'll try another phone call before we go back. I'm going to see if Lily is on yet. Hi, Lily.
Actually, it's Lori.
Oh, go ahead, Lori.
Hi, that's why I didn't answer before. Thanks for taking my call. A comment on the previous guest regarding the Republicans who introduced the bill regarding running into protesters. And he mentioned, there being an underhanded reason perhaps for them introducing such a bill. And I just would like to say that, to me, it's the continued infiltration of white supremacists in our government. They've infiltrated the police department. They've infiltrated parts of our government. And so for me, it's just an obvious, it's not potentially underhanded. To me, it's glaringly, it's transparent. They're trying to get in there. It's a war. And it's a war tactic, and they've been strategic, and they're winning in that respect. And on the with your current guest, I want to say I'm progressive. I don't consider myself liberal. I am out there at marches and vigils. I am out there talking to my black neighbors. I'm out there, writing, calling my legislator, everything else. But a lot of us, we find it incredibly defeating when persons such as your guest today continue to say that the white people, they have a vigil for the person who, this white woman, but where were they when this and that? There are a huge number of people out there who do see this. We recognize our white privilege. We cannot imagine how difficult it is in this society for people of color, but we try to understand it. We try to be the faces of the white combating other white people in their prejudices. And it feels like sometimes that whatever we do, it's just simply not enough. So I wish there would be a more generalized expression of frustration with certain groups of white people. Now, in my opinion, whether the person who died on Saturday in that event had been a white woman or a black man, there would have been a vigil. There's just simply, I don't think, enough time to create and pull together a vigil for every single thing. Because please understand, we're also on the ground organizing, trying to get out the vote and doing all kinds of other things.
Lori, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Donna, how would you respond to that?
I'm going to, this message is for all white people who are listening. We need you to not center yourselves in our struggle for liberation, dignity, humanity, freedom. As much as you'd like to center yourself and your emotions, you need to realize that for nearly half a millennium, people have suffered, died, lived without dignity, not just black people, the working class, right? We have to have a class analysis in this too. So if you're a middle class white person, you don't fear for your life if you realize that you drove home, are you driving without a brake light? So you're going to need to sit with that frustration and just let that be, chalk it up to the game. You're going to see people raging when you've built an empire on their land and with their resources. You're going to see people raging. People are not going to be polite about oppression that they know is being engineered by a group of people in the ethno state that they are slaves in. So your discomfort is of little to no concern, and I don't mean to be inhumane, but it pales in comparison to the act of genocide that's happening in this country when children born into poverty, taken out of their parents' arms because they cannot cope. These are the things that we need you to think about. If you really want to get a handle on how our society became shaped like this, I'd advise you to pick up a copy of The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. She's going to take you from Bacon's Rebellion all the way to the current day, through the Black Codes, through Reconstruction, through Black Wall Street being destroyed. She's going to take you through the lynchings, Ida B. Wells. She's going to show you how we got here. White people, you need to understand the anatomy of the apparatus of our oppression. You need to understand your role in it, and you need to not center your feelings in this.
And when you ask people to not center yourself in the struggle, that's not this. I'm asking if that's not the same. It's not the same as saying you don't want solidarity. You don't want compatriots. Is that? I mean, I'm asking that question.
That's exactly what we're not saying. Reverend Russell Meyer called me this morning and said, "Hey, can we talk about last night?" Of course we can. What do you want to do, lunch at our regular place tomorrow? He's a mentor of mine. Ruby Sales, civil rights icon. These people call us and they say, hey, can we talk about the tactics? Can we talk about some other ways? Can we talk about a way to fill in some of the blanks for folks out there so that we can start drafting people to our cause? So those people are behind the scenes, our elders, they're advising and supporting us. We want that. But someone's feeling discomfort at hearing a cuss word or seeing someone express the rage at their lived experience is not something that we're going to spend a lot of time on.
813-239-9663. Were you at one of the vigils last night? What did you think? Or are you organizing something in your community? Give us a call. 813-239-9663. My guest is Donna Davis with Black Lives Matter. I'm Sean Canaan with WMNF in Tampa, and you're listening to Midpoints. And Adam writes in, anyone who knows someone who fought in World War II should be outraged that Nazis are openly marching in the streets of America in 2017. It's spitting on the graves of veterans and victims. Adam goes on, thanks for that long email, but I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing. 813-239-9663. Let's try David in Tampa. Hi, David.
Hi. You know, it was interesting that in terms of how much the world has changed, and I feel like some of these Nazis and these white supremacists have felt the world kind of left them behind. And one example I was thinking, I saw the new Spider-Man movie yesterday, and there's later in the film, there's kind of a mixed-race family that's revealed. And I'm thinking certain members of my family probably would have walked out at that point because of the not supporting mixed race and just being just fairly hardcore racist. And unfortunately, there are a lot of folks like that in our society who maybe are emboldened by Bannon and Trump. But it's kind of scary stuff. And they're very violent people and they feel very entitled. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. Thank you, David. Thanks for that call. 813-239-9663 if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second, but let me catch up with a couple of these emails. Actually, before I do that, I'm going to read just some news things that have come down about this story today. The group Anonymous has hacked into and taken over the white supremacist website Daily Stormer and changed the title from Summer of Hate Edition to End of Hate. Anonymous now in control of Daily Stormer, hashtag Tango Down. So that's some news about the Daily Stormer website that's, I think, based out of Florida, or at least will be for, it would have been for the next day. I think their internet service provider was taking them down over the next day, Anonymous kind of accelerated that progress. Let's go to Jessica in Brandon. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, I have a question. I heard your guest speaker mention that they were coming to USF, and I was wondering if there was a scheduled date that they were planning on marching at USF, and also if what is the opinion? Like, if you're a mom of three kids and you want to protest, but you also don't want to risk getting killed, is it better to just stay home and maybe organize something, or is it better to protest? It's a real conflict, you know. As a mom, I don't want my kids growing up to see this. I grew up in the Bronx. I had people that helped raise me that were actually survivors of Auschwitz. I grew up hearing those stories. I'm horrified that this is happening in 2017, and it's just really confusing. Like, what does a person do? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate that question. Donna, your response?
We want you to do what it is that you can do. You have three young children. I'm a mom. I know how that works. So it gives you short legs. And so one of the things you can do, when Jesus Cervantes was killed, he had four young daughters, and I'm sure you can understand that.
Can I interject? I'm sorry. That's the young man who was killed in Plant City by the Plant City police,
right,
in very questionable circumstances.
Very questionable circumstances. And so we put up a GoFundMe. We needed to raise money for the family immediately. Jose was the breadwinner in his family. As opposed to driving to Plant City and standing out in the rain and being eaten alive by mosquitoes, you could simply put $10, you know, the cost of a couple cups of coffee, on that GoFundMe. And if hundreds of people do that, it makes a huge difference to the family as they transition into a different life. So there are many ways you can support the work. We don't have a budget. Black Lives Matter Tampa does not have a budget. So we get our money out of our own pockets, right? We go down to the lint. So if you reach out to the message box on that note and on our page, you could do that. Give to an organization that's doing work that you believe in. It doesn't have to be us. So there are lots of different ways. Write your legislator, collect petitions, however you're comfortable, just participate.
Our guest is Donna Davis with Black Lives Matter, and my name is Sean Canaan on Midpoint Monday on WMNF. It's 12:52 in the afternoon, and I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second. The number is 813-239-9663. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office said in an email that there was a, and this is a quote, criminal mischief and graffiti at the Confederate Memorial in Sefner's Confederate Memorial Park on U.S. Highway 92. A passerby discovered the graffiti, called 911. Yeah. Deputies responded at 11 last night and discovered red paint thrown on all of the memorial columns and drops of paint on the cement ground throughout the memorial. The sheriff's office says there were also derogatory comments written in paint on the memorial. The sheriff's department says anyone with information about the identity and whereabouts of the suspect in the that's put graffiti on the Confederate Memorial in Sefner is eligible for a cash reward from Crime Stoppers. Let's go to Susan in St. Pete. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. What I want to say, you know, when you see a cockroach in your kitchen, that usually means there's another 100 that are hidden. And with all the people of the KKK and whatever who are out these last few days, I'm wanting to suggest, and I've heard this from a lot of my black friends, that they believe that the police, the legal system, the judges have all been infiltrated by the KKK. And given the leniency that's shown to the police when they kill a black person that's unarmed, that's, you know, not specifically doing anything horribly wrong, that if I did it, they wouldn't even stop me. Then, you know, I think that's where we need to look also. So that's what I'd like to say. And the other thing, for all the white people that are listening, you know, one of the things you can do, St. Pete has a wonderful African-American museum. And on the second Saturday of each month, all the art places are open. But you can go to the museum frequently, and it's free. And they have wonderful programs there. And come over, get to meet these people. The trolley often comes down to that area, but the white people don't get off. They're scared. Well, you know what? Get over it, because I live down in South St. Pete, and I feel so much safer here than, you know, many places that I've been that are primarily white. So, you know, get over yourself. Come down, meet the people, go to the restaurants and, enjoy the culture. It's so rich.
Susan, thank you for that call. Sorry I cut you off abruptly. Donna?
I'm not really sure what Susan's question was.
Yeah, we can move on if that's what you'd prefer.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So thank you for that call, Susan. We'll try to get a couple more, squeeze about two or three more calls in here. Let's go to Peter in Tampa. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, I just want to say all of my solidarity, of course, with people of goodwill, people who, love and admire diversity and all of that. And I have no sympathy whatsoever for white nationalists, not at all. However, I think the current approach of opposing the white nationalist sort of sentiment is not effective at all. And I also think that identity politics is itself part of the problem, and that the identity politics crowd, their approach to opposing white nationalism is itself part of the problem. But a couple of things. Number one, there is no reason why the counter protests to these people need to be taking place on top of or in the same space. For me, this is just like a recipe for disaster. These two groups of people keep encountering one another physically, and nothing results from it but violence and terrible things. Everybody who opposes their point of view can do so, but there's no reason to do so, in my opinion, from 3 feet away. I think nothing good sort of comes from that. But ultimately, I think that white nationalism has arisen as a result of two things. One, identity politics itself places an emphasis on blackness or Hispanicness. Well, whiteness, the focus on whiteness, is itself a natural result of that way of thinking, right? And in my opinion, a working class politics is superior to a identity politics. The second thing is,
Peter, I'm sorry, I'm gonna cut you off because I do want to get Donna's response, and you've added a lot. So thank you so much for your call, Donna. What are your thoughts about what Peter said?
That Peter's out of line. We don't really. What you're saying actually doesn't make sense. You're saying that people should not speak about their experience that they're having because they're black, and that when they do that, it incites people to talk about the experience they're having because they're white. So let's stop there for a moment and dissect that. If you are not enslaving me because of my race or class, then I am not going to protest that. I have nothing to protest. What makes it possible for this conversation to take place is the discrimination, murder, theft, and abuse that's happened to Native, Asian, Black, disabled women for hundreds of years. Saying that the counter conversation is causing white nationalism when we know that we live in an ethno state, when every data point illustrates the inequities and the lack of parity in all of these demographics and all of these areas, and you're going to say that the conversation, that the rhetoric is what's causing white people to be racist? Sir, I cannot.
All right, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Bonavette in Tampa. Hi, Bonavette.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling in.
Good. I'm an African-American woman. Now, who's your guest that you have there? What is her name? I don't want to be disrespectful.
Donna Davis is with Black Lives Matter.
Donna, I understand your cause. I'm with you 100%. But your tone, like when the lady Susan from St. Pete's was making a good point about going over, and then you said you didn't understand her question. I think you have to watch your tone, because I was a little disgusted with it. And I understand your cause. I'm with you. Believe me, I have African American males in my family, but I'm it just seemed a little like you're not sensitive to other people's concern, and that's all I have to say.
Bonifet, thanks for that call. I don't know, Donna.
You're ridiculous. And let me tell you why you're ridiculous. And if you didn't like that tone, you're not going to like this. And I usually try to stay in a lane where I am explaining and teaching and taking that approach, as opposed to just telling people off and getting them, because it doesn't produce anything. But if that's what you're offended by in all of this, I feel for you. If that's what you're offended by in all of this, I'm going to ask you to read some books. please don't tone police. There's a thing called tone policing. And it's when you say that the legitimacy of someone's cause or assertion is impacted by their tone. The conditions remain, whether I whisper them to you, whether I give them to you in a flowery basket or not, these conditions remain. Address that. Don't worry about my tone.
Well, if that's all the time we have for the show, I appreciate you joining us today, Donna. Thank you so much. Thanks. Donna Davis is with Black Lives Matter. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. And if you're one of the several people who are still on the line, please give me a call and leave a voicemail, 813-238-8001, extension 114, and I'll play your message next show. Or if you want to call in after the show, you can join the conversation online. Thanks to Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. Stay tuned for executive session coming up next with Craig Kopp. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. Thanks for listening.